Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Hope everyone had a nice and peaceful Memorial Day. I know that wasn't necessarily the case in Chicago. What did you do, Amy, something ghastly, like bike the drive or something?
No, I didn't. I've done that before. That should be on your bucket list. That's cool.
No.
Actually. Well, you where you live, you could see all the little bikers, right?
Yes.
And hear their little bells and see their baskets on the front.
No, there's nothing more I like, too, than middle-aged men and women in spandex pretending that they're riding the Tour de France.
But you probably hate it because you can't. You're boxed in, right? If you don't get out.
No, I can't
on
out.
Time. Oh, there's
I can
a way
get out. I mean, I may have
oh,
to
how many people do you take out? Though?
Clear out some bicyclists. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I went to St. Louis for the weekend and couldn't breathe. You thought it was hot here? Ooh, 10 minutes playing hoops out front. Like, I think this. I'm going to go down. Like, I'm going
to
have a gripper. It was really hard to breathe because I'm one
old
of those
playing hoops.
Well, and I'm in one of the sensitive groups that we always talk about to be careful breathing.
Sensitive cohort.
Yeah, it says air quality for sensitive groups. Should be careful, not do too much physical activity outside. But no, yeah, we had a nice time catching up. The people in Missouri, you know how you have anti-Trumpers? You have anti-Greitensers. That's what they call themselves.
Uh-huh.
And they're
difficult to say.
No way talking them into supporting this guy. I couldn't believe what vitriol and hate they have toward him. I said, but it's okay if Trump has an affair, but he can't have an
never
affair.
Never Greitens.
Greitensers. Greitensers. That's what they call themselves.
They need to work on the marketing for that.
Okay.
That name they've come, that group name they've come up.
They've
with.
Given up. I mean, I tried. There, it's out. It's over.
So. Well, up here, it's the new normal under Tiny Dancer. The last I saw, 8 dead and 30 wounded. So last Memorial Day weekend, it was 7 dead, 45 wounded, and in 2016, it was 8 dead and 57 wounded. So you see the consistency.
We're getting better. I mean, it's a joke. The town we live in is a joke. We can't even enjoy the lakefront anymore. On Friday, I didn't leave till Saturday, but on Friday went to North Avenue Beach. They had already cut off people parking by 11 a.m. And then they're checking your bags. I mean, it's really, I guess it's, you know, it's extra, you know, level of safety and security, but it's just strange the times we live in. They know something that we don't know.
Well,
they know things that are going to be happening, like gangs meeting up.
Well, what they know is that they don't have the resources to control the city. They don't have the backing of the civilian political authorities to police the city. I'm talking about the Chicago police, of course. And so they know they're undermanned and overmatched, and that sort of bore itself out. I saw something on Twitter feed that sort of reports on police scanner activity. Adler Planetarium, 20 people fighting with bats, knives, and hot coals. So,
from the barbecues,
We're going to have to do something about hot coal control.
Well, that was the name
Chicago.
Of your band, Hot Coals.
It was a Power Station cover band.
Yeah, that's
right.
What I
hot coal control.
Hot coal.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's scary, especially there if you're with your kids, that is some frightening stuff because you got to protect not only yourself but your children, and it's just I don't understand what happened to Chicago. It keeps getting worse and worse and scarier and scarier. We had a guy walking down our street going heroin. I want heroin, and I like everybody get in the house. Yeah. Get in your houses now. He was so
Alderman,
smacked
please
up on drugs.
Alderman Pawar, please. You'll get your heroin. There's no reason to yell.
But people on drugs do stupid things. So like everybody. Get inside right now. We're not messing around. And because I don't have a gun to shoot him if he comes and lunges at us and tries to steal something so that he could, you know, get his next high.
We'll take your brush with death in Chicago this Memorial Day weekend. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Of course, Memorial Day weekend, any holiday weekend brings with it sales pitches.
Yeah.
And oftentimes tone deaf sales pitches.
Right.
So here's the winner of the
President Trump?
Tone deaf sales pitch. Sorry. No. This is Scout. Is Scout some sort of like a shoe joint or online shoe?
I don't know. I'll find out right now.
Six to die for summer sandals on major sale for Memorial Day weekend.
That's too soon.
It's
to die for, as in it's the coolest thing ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Memorial Day sales finally upon us. Six to die for summer sandals on major sale. Not quite understanding the concept. Now, the flip side, a good Memorial Day story I read in Wall Street Journal. So it's just nice that those who gave their lives in service are honored, even
that's what it's about.
When that honor was delayed. This is a story from Pennsylvania. Lance Corporal Jimmy Reddington, killed in Vietnam 51 years later, in time for this Memorial Day, he's finally getting the 12 medals he earned there, including two Purple Hearts. Joe Silvestri, who was wounded but survived the same battle that took Jimmy Reddington's life, discovered Reddington's grave in 1994 in Scranton's Cathedral Cemetery. So Joe Silvestri has been coming back, along with other Marines, to tend to the grave, pay respects to Jimmy Reddington, and helped to ensure that he gets the honors that are due him.
Yeah.
Yesterday, the Marine Corps League was presented with the 12 medals that Jimmy Reddington earned serving our country in the Vietnam War and with his brothers in arms around him. So that's a good Memorial Day story amid the bad ones here locally. Derek in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. Quick question for Amy. When you said that you didn't have a gun to shoot the man yelling heroin on your street.
Heroin, yeah.
My question and statement is, why don't you have a gun? And my statement is, another question would be, how can anyone complain about a city not protecting them when people aren't willing to protect themselves?
That's a good question. So I moved here in 1996 from Detroit, and we had a gun ban in the city. So I was compliant, and I handed over. I gave my .38 special in and got a CD, I think, DVD.
Hung on loosely to that .38 special. Thank you, Mike Scott.
Yes, thank you. I was singing the song, too, when I gave my precious little piece away. Here you go.
Well,
I was being compliant.
You carry in studio, so why not?
Yeah, right.
Why not on
the
beach?
What I do have? I have a fake 9mm in the car, just in case.
I'll tell you you may want to think about
that. Would that use minivan?
Because a fake 9mm doesn't beat a real 9mm.
Well, it's a pellet gun.
So if you draw on somebody and they draw back, then...
then I duck and run, and then I speed off, and that thing goes on a dime.
Yeah.
0 to 30 in 30.
Right. Yes. You're Remo Williams. You can dodge bullets. Yeah. What about that? What about Derek's point? What about a weapon, at least for home protection?
Right. But then you have to separate the ammo from the gun. I would be very responsible. I'd have to get a safe underneath my bed. Because if that's where you'd want it, because if you're sleeping. But
under your pillow where I keep mine with my finger on the trigger.
Oh, that's how you sleep?
No.
I do have Bunky, though.
Well, that's not going to be enough either. If it came down to Bunky or the fake 9mm, I'd probably go with the fake 9.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Oh, yeah. So I just got a text message from our good friends that listen every morning.
Uh-huh.
Firefighters in Chicago. I won't say what engine company because I don't want them to get in trouble.
Sure.
But they asked, well, why don't you ask Dan what he did this weekend? Why is it always about you, Amy?
Because nobody cares.
I care. What did you do this weekend?
I was mainly involved in that hot coal fight down at the Adler Planetarium. I thought that'd be a fun way to pass the time.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Grabbed a bat and some hot coal and started swinging.
I went shooting.
Okay.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
And
did Hayek go with you?
He did.
That is so great.
Enjoy the great outdoors.
Do you get your dog Earmuffs?
No, a friend of mine has got a dog, and he puts cotton in his dog's ears, but, you know, my dog's not a baby, so he's fine.
And he just sits at your feet when you're
shooting? Yeah, or he runs around. You know, it's a big Aurora Sportsman's has a lot of room.
You just run around?
Yeah.
What if he gets into the, or he gets on the field?
Well,
near a target?
No, well, no, he's not running around, you know, down down range. No, I'm not doing that. But, you know, dance, Hayek. No, not doing that. But
and
no,
it's good.
Aurora Sportsman's Club, you know, where our friend Dave Lombardo, he's the president of the club and stuff out west. It's good. No, I didn't play any golf. I needed a mental health break from golf.
You're taking a break? Getting ready for the tournament?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity. Right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
So Jason Seaman hails from Mahomet and was a standout at SIU.
Yeah, he was a defensive lineman.
But nothing he accomplished on the football field compares to what he did during that school shooting in Noblesville, Indiana on Friday. Again, another story that was sort of breaking right as we were getting off the air.
Yeah, and what happened is it was his seventh grade science class, and it was the first class of the day. And the seventh grader, they were taking a test. The seventh grader left, and he came back with a gun and shot this girl, Ella Whistler, several times. And the teacher, Jason Seaman, jumped in and tackled the gunman, but he was shot three times while tackling the gunman.
We saw one girl fall to the ground, and our science teacher immediately ran at him, wadded the gun out of his hand, and tackled him to the ground. If it weren't for him, more of us would have been injured for sure.
And importantly, Ella Whistler, I mean, Seaman is okay. Ella, he spoke to the press. We'll hear from him in a second. Also, Ella Whistler was in critical but stable condition over the weekend, so she's going to survive as well.
Yeah, and when Jason Seaman spoke to reporters yesterday, so he got out of the hospital in Indianapolis, went to a conference room, spoke to reporters, would not take any questions from the media, would not take any bites, I'm told, but that, you know, you never know, from Good Morning America, the Today Show, because he wants to go back to class. And he said, it was the only acceptable action I could have taken, you know, seeing what he saw.
I want to make it clear that my actions on that day, in my mind, were the only acceptable actions I could have done given the circumstances. I deeply care for my students and their well-being, so that is why I did what I did that day.
Yeah, also his larger statement, he was complimentary of the students as well as the school resource officer and others in the same. I mean, you know, very much not a look at me type of response.
In the last couple of days, I have heard story after story of how members of the Noblesville West family conducted themselves during that day, and I couldn't say enough times how proud of them I am, how they conducted themselves around students, given their own emotions and such. I need to give a special thanks to Officer Stefan. He was incredible throughout the entire process, the entire ordeal. I'm eternally grateful to have him in our building. Along with Officer Stefan, an unbelievably brave colleague, entered my room. It was absolutely crucial in keeping Ella alert and calm as we waited for help to arrive. I can't say enough how proud of Ella I am and how we all should be. Her courage and strength at such a young age is nothing short of remarkable, and we should all continue to keep her in our minds as she continues to recover. My nurses at IU Methodist, along with the surgical team and everyone else responsible for taking care of me, did a fantastic job. They were unbelievable, very accommodating throughout the whole thing. Lastly, I must acknowledge the community. Their support has been first class the entire time. Community members have found numerous ways to support myself and my wife, Colette, throughout the process. They have done so while still allowing us to maintain our privacy as we continue to process what we're processing. I must give a special thank you to Jackson for starting the GoFundMe page. I can't really fathom how someone I have not personally met would do such an act of kindness, and how the Noblesville community has been so generous in their response to it. I'm still processing much of what has happened. But I can say with absolute certainty that I am proud to be a Miller. Thank you.
How about that?
Oh, that is so. And think, this man is 29 years old. 29. Compare him to that 30-year-old that was just got kicked out of his parents' house. I mean, this is how you want to raise your boys to be men like Jason Seaman. Seriously. And last night,
prairie values, I'd say.
Yeah, and the last night, it was so sweet. So he showed up, got out of the hospital, had the quick press conference, took no questions from reporters, and then went to the school's baseball game where they cheered.
Active shooter.
Oh, that's not it. Sucks.
We saw one girl.
And that's not it either. Well, they cheered him on, and they were cheering him on, saying that he did, you know, a great job. And parents were lined up because they want to meet him someday.
He's an absolute hero. I can't believe what he did. I can't wait to get the opportunity to shake his hand.
We're just forever grateful because other lives could have been impacted terribly if he wouldn't have stepped in and did what he did.
So everyone's grateful, and here's the cheer. It's cute.
Jason Seaman!
The Ice Ice Baby song.
Ice Baby.
Jason
under
Seaman.
Pressure.
Yep, because he did well under pressure.
Yeah,
get
I'd
it?
Say. Yeah, it's it's something. You know, on this larger topic of school shootings, there was an interesting op-ed over the weekend from Ken Paxton, who's the Attorney General for the state of Texas. He, after Santa Fe and Parkland, gun control is a waste of time, writes the AG. But he says there is a model for us to emulate. And this has been referenced before, experts we've spoken with on this show. But it hasn't been referenced in a while. He writes, this Paxton, that we should follow the Israeli model. American policymakers should look to Israel for guidance, living constantly with the threat of terrorism. Israel solved the problem of school security long ago by hardening the target and tightening security practices. Every school with 100 or more students has at least one well-trained armed guard stationed at entrances to monitor who comes and goes. These guards operate under the auspices of the Israeli police, undergo rigorous training every 4 months. Roughly 40% of applicants fail the training test, ensuring that only the cream of the crop defend the schools. Israel also rigorously trains students on how to respond in case of a crisis. We should continue to increase our efforts to do the same. We already require students to participate periodically in fire drills, but the last school fire that killed 10 or more was 1958. So he suggests, in terms of the hardening of the target, post the trained and capable armed guards outside as well as inside schools like Israel does. Consider reducing the number of entrances to the building. We've talked about that. Now, there's some concerns about getting out in case there is a fire, but it's a point of discussion. Metal detectors, make classroom doors more secure against an attack. Think about like the doors to the cockpits after 9/11,
yeah,
right?
They were secured.
So, I mean, there are some suggestions just in terms of dealing with the reality on the ground, because the larger cultural issues that are at play here are more difficult to readily address.
And think about this, guys, this is not a high school we're talking about. This is a middle school. This was a seventh grade student. They're still not releasing his name or the motive behind the shooting, but I mean, that's normally we talk about high school shooters, and only elementary school was it was an adult, a crazed adult who entered and stormed an elementary school. But if that had he blew out when Sandy Hook, he shot out the window, and that's how he gained entrance to the school. So we have to do something.
Well, and some, you know, and there's some disagreement too, even about the armed guards. I mean, you know, the armed guards become a target, as John Lott Jr. suggests, right? A potential shooter knows that they've got an armed guard they've got to deal with, so you have to disable the armed guard if you want to, you know, inflict the mayhem that you're intending to inflict. So there's no easy solutions, but certainly hardening the targets seems like a sensible one, generally speaking. That's what we've done in federal buildings.
Yeah.
The Israeli example is another one that certainly, you know, provides some food for thought in terms of policies and strategies to emulate. So, you know, kind of move past the, you know, boycotting of schools and the other temper tantrums from the left, the leftists like Arne Duncan, and maybe to some actual work product in the schools consistent with what we know works.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about Jason Seaman, the hero of that Noblesville school shooting, Illinois boy made good, and also Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's op-ed talking about hardening school targets as something that could be done post-haste and should be. Craig in Mount Greenwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Dan, the
the solution is to take and allow the instructors and teachers that are willing to take their special training and hide a small pistol on themselves and everything is efficient and effective. It's the in the politicians they won't do it in it, and yet they're surrounded by people exactly the same way. Just people, plain clothes, lots of weapons hidden on them and everything like that, and that's the way to take and protect the potential target.
Yeah.
And the thing with the teachers, there's plenty of them. There's plenty of us that would love to be trained and authorized to do it, but they don't even go there, and yet it's the most effective and efficient and best way to take and solve it because of all the teachers that would be willing to do it in every single school.
Thanks for the call, Craig.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Got to do a little Willard Scott business here at the top.
Smuckers.
Happy birthday. I don't know how to do it. Willard Scott impersonation.
Yeah.
Just do it straight. Happy birthday, Brian Lipinski. Birthday over the weekend. Apparently, he's an avid listener of ours.
Is he 100?
He's not 100. And he's not an old woman. Nope. Apparently, this a friend of mine passed us along. He's got three young kids.
Yeah.
He enjoys rusty nails, which, of course, is a good way to self-medicate with three young kids.
Yes.
He is Iron Man.
Oh, there you go.
Foot surgeon, conservative libertarian, Brian Hughes out of Elburn.
Nice.
I mean, Brian Hughes. He lives on Hute. Well, I
don't
say where he lives. Oh, my gosh. Brian Lipinski.
What do you give his social security number
Brian
out?
Brian Lipinski in Elburn. Yeah, I would just stop by. Just drop in the Lipinski household in Elburn. Oh, let me give you the address. I love that. They like to do the drop-ins.
What about his bank account number?
Yeah.
Huh? Wire us into that?
Yeah, sorry about that, Brian.
What's the routing number, Dan, huh?
That's not enough information to find him in Elburn.
Yes.
That's, spread out there. That's country.
But don't we have a 100-year-old?
Ah!
Ah!
Surprise! It's down the road.
Okay. Well, you should tell me these things.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right. We're going to have to improve our Willard Scott impersonation game.
First time was the worst time.
But Brian Lipinski, who does not live on Hughes Road.
No.
As far as you know.
In Elburn.
He will be getting what we always send, which is an autographed picture of Amy from her Girls of Iowa calendar.
It's called the Women of Iowa. Not the girls.
You were a Chi Omega. What were you?
No, I was Kappa Kappa Gamma.
Oh yeah,
Meghan
yeah.
Markle.
All right,
sorority sister.
So enjoy that with the wife and the kids.
Yeah,
Brian, congratulations. Louis Farrakhan weighing in on President Trump. Normally, don't like to devote. A lot of time, as in any time, to Louis Farrakhan because he's an anti-Semitic, hate-mongering crank. But he weighed in on President Trump, and this is getting some play, including from conservatives. It's a bit concerning, but Farrakhan took to the airwaves. Our friends over at WGCI on a program called The Morning Takeover, and then he tweeted out a two-minute video sort of endorsing Trump. Listen to Farrakhan.
And some people would argue that it's better now that the racism is more in our face rather than hidden. What's your perspective on that?
Well, that wasn't the intent of this administration to do a lot of good for us. But the nature of this administration is good for us. Because now, sometimes you think you're where you are not. And so Trump is letting you know where you really stand.
Oh.
And because of Trump's way, he is an anomaly. There's never been no president quite like Mr. Trump. But there's something that he's doing. I'm going to come out in a few weeks and talk about it. But Trump is destroying every enemy that was an enemy of our rise. Who's the enemy of our rise? Is it the Department of Justice where we get none? Is it Congress where you make a law that favors us and then you turn around and destroy it? Is it the media that has destroyed every black leader that stood up for us, calling us out of our name? Martin Luther King suffered it. Malcolm suffered it. Du Bois suffered it. Marcus Garvey suffered it. So he's attacking the media, calls it fake news. Well, I don't think everything is fake, but I know, I know very well.
Right.
Yeah, your anti-Semitism is very real. It's also your just general racism. But what about that? What about Farrakhan saying that Trump is destroying every enemy of our rise, talking about black people? This was met with...
Well, the left loved it.
The left? No, I don't know that the left loved it at all, because it puts them in the position of having to, what, denounce Farrakhan. And who on the left is willing to do that? Not many. The question is, why is the right, some on the right, why are they sort of rallying to this, to the statement given the stator? Candace Owens, in no way do I endorse Farrakhan's views, but holy crap, this is a really big deal. He's just aligned himself with the Trump's administration. What is going on in the black community right now is unprecedented. Flag this, it's relevant. Glenn Beck, who had been a never Trumper, seconded Candace Owens's take. This is huge, and it's the principle of what's called, and it is the principle of what caused all of our damage in the Middle East. It never leads to peace. The end of my enemy is my friend. We must find reconciliation in our hearts, not hate, destruction, or violence, even of the tongue. Yeah. Is this important? Is this relevant? Is this something that should be amplified by conservatives? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Let me add that in another tweet on Sunday morning, Farrakhan also call for an end to white men, claiming nature is not in their nature, white men's nature is not in harmony with the nature of God, just in case you forgot who we're dealing with here. So, yeah, this goes back to what I've said before about some of our newfound elevated spokespeople, or maybe some even of our previously celebrated spokespeople, like Glenn Beck, who self-described as a rodeo clown. I mean, that's how he described
right.
himself.
Right.
You know, Candace Owens talked about this with Larry Elder, saying of Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams and Glenn Lowry, why weren't they more effective? The giants on whose shoulders she stands, as we all do. Oh, well, because they were too concerned about being liked. No, that's absolutely not the case. That is a statement... an ignorant statement of the highest order. And, you know, so Candace Owens is, we've had her on the show. She's sharp and she's attractive and she's galvanizing people. And that's all great. Same thing like with Tommy Lahren, who we've talked about before. But there is a kicking of the tires that needs to happen to make sure we're elevating people who've read the books. They don't just know some of the words. Elevating people who have a sense of historical context for the things they're inveighing for or against. And the Louis Farrakhan, you know, kind of in no way do I endorse his views, but this is a big deal. No.
Well, do you think his comments are relevant? She also.
Yeah, I like this is this what's going on in the black community right now is unprecedented. The flag this it's relevant. He's aligned himself with the Trump administration. How would I respond to what Farrakhan said about Trump and what Farrakhan said about how Trump is sort of inadvertently doing what Farrakhan would like to see done? I mean, Farrakhan thinks the media, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the white man have all prevented black people's rise. Right. That's what he just said. You just heard him say it effectively. Well, I don't think that. And I don't endorse Farrakhan's views. I don't find him relevant. We shouldn't say he's relevant. We should treat him as irrelevant. He should be marginalized. Why? Because he's a purveyor of hate. Because he's a racist. Because he's anti-Semite.
Sunday, he called for an end to white man.
So why the kind of, oh, this is so big? It's this idea that if we could use somebody or something as a cudgel against the other side, then we have no standards. If we can use Farrakhan to middle other hate mongers of the left, Linda Sarsour, for example, then because he said things that are sort of backhanded compliments of Trump, that we should embrace that for the means of middling her or others like her? No. Farrakhan is just as much of an anti-Semite and a demagogue and a purveyor of hate today as he was before he made the statements about Trump. And Trump should summarily reject it as well, to the extent that he even wants to acknowledge it or engage it.
I don't want him to acknowledge anything on Twitter. Don't leave this one alone.
Well, I don't suggest he does, but to the extent he's going to, he should provide an example to say, there's nobody that we want in our camp. There's nobody that I want complimenting my administration. I don't care what Louis Farrakhan says. He should be ignored because he has nothing productive to say. And because he has acolytes and because he has cowered some on the left from previously denouncing him, maybe they'll be more inclined to now, but from previously denouncing him with all the hateful things, ignorant things that he said, he should be embraced on the right? I don't follow that logic. I don't follow that logic, which is why, again, I say, everything that glimmers is not gold. Everything that shimmers is sure to fade away, according to Fuel. And, and that rock band knows what they're talking about.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and we're talking about Farrakhan. Well, some of his acolytes / apologists, Sean King, Black Lives Matter, Linda Sarsour, the Women's March organizer.
Sean King's white, by the way. Not African American.
Yeah, Rachel Dolezal, too.
Oh, yeah, and isn't she in jail now? Or she was charged with fraud.
She's been recommended to be charged with welfare fraud in Washington State.
How did she think she could get away with that? She was making a nice chunk of change on Netflix, or from Netflix, and still collecting unemployment checks, and was on welfare. She owes almost $9,000.
Well, that ilk was quick to criticize Trump over the weekend, tweeting a picture of immigrant minors sleeping in a caged enclosure. Accompanied by this turns out, at least according to the administration, to be false, about 1,500 immigrant kids, unaccompanied immigrant children, who the government had been unable to account for, according to CNN. That was rejected by the administration. But these pictures of kids in cages, essentially, that were tweeted out, and it was interesting. Red Stees pointed this out, too, that Sean King, Linda Sarsour, and others, all tweeted out this story in this picture at the same time, same content. Gee, interesting. It turns out that the picture they were tweeting was from 2014.
Yeah, when President Obama was in charge.
Yeah.
But so the liberals wrongly linked that 2014 photo to the Trump administration. That's why people are saying fake news a lot.
Well, and right. And when Ivanka tweets out a picture of her and her son
and her 2-year-old son,
like, I love Sunday morning with the, hashtag or whatever.
Kind of like what you do with your imaginary children.
Exactly.
Right?
What I do with Hayek.
Just a little different.
And then you get the response from, for example, Dana Schwartz, who's a correspondent at Entertainment Weekly. Imagine posting on the day the top news story is 1,500 children ripped from their parents who have no idea when they'll see them again. How dare Ivanka post a picture of herself and her son? Ivanka takes just as much pleasure in all this cruelty as her father.
Oh,
and the side-by-side picture of her and then the kids sleeping, on the floor in blankets and stuff.
Looking
forth.
At that right now, thinking, okay, keep going left.
Yeah.
Keep digging yourself in a hole. Come on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, and she hasn't responded. I don't want her to respond.
Well, she hasn't responded, but I mean, it's just.
She doesn't need to.
So this was the one picture was happening under, is a picture from the Obama years. The story has been rejected by the administration. It's simply not the case. Oh, and the other point is the underlying policy of children came here, unaccompanied minors, children who were brought here by their parents. You're talking about the administration that has suggested a pathway to permanent status, not just for the 800,000 with that designation, the DACA designation, but for the additional million who were eligible for the designation and didn't pursue it. Right. So I'm sorry, where is the heartlessness lie exactly? Who's being cruel?
To whom?
This is why, this is why the left just doesn't have any legitimacy. They just have sentimentality, and it's not even rooted in the truth. That's why I think it's difficult to find deals to be had with folks like this, right? Yeah. That are offended by this Ivanka picture.
Yeah, and one person who tweeted, the picture was, because I'm the name assassinator, John Favreau, former president, speechwriter.
Oh, of course, yeah, sure, Favreau.
He said,
yeah,
this is happening right now, and the only debate that matters is how we force our government to get these kids back to their families as fast as humanly possible. He later deleted the tweet.
Yeah, because it's...
But not before that it had been screen captured.
It's happening right now in 2014.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Dan. This is happening. Now, get your game face on.
Well, speaking of the Obama administration, this is a fun little piece. $50 million... Well, I didn't know this until I read the New York Post piece on it. The Netflix deal that we talked about last week, the Obamas.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, we were proposing all kinds of Netflix shows.
Yeah, and a 30-year-old who just got evicted from his parents' house. That would be a good, docudrama miniseries.
Or how about a sitcom? He could move in with Pajamas Boy.
Oh.
From the Obamacare marketing campaign.
Right.
Rotundo and Pajamas Boy. Or they could solve crimes. It could be like a buddy cop thing.
Oh, yeah. Like Cagney and Lacey.
$50 million.
Oh my God!
Is one estimated value on the deal, and how this got lined up is interesting. Here's some good reporting.
The Netflix is paying the Obamas $50 million.
According to one entertainment industry source, the deal could be valued at more than $50 million. Ted Sarandos is the creative content chief for Netflix. Ted Sarandos was a bundler for the Obama campaigns. Sarandos and his wife, Nicole Avant, bundled nearly $600,000 in contributions to Obama from their friends and associates during the 12 reelect campaign. Avant, so Sarandos' wife, served as the U.S. ambassador to Bahamas from 2009 to 2011 during Obama's first term. Avant's father, Clarence, is a music exec. He bundled a total of about $450,000 for Obama's presidential campaigns. So there's the story.
Hmm.
You provide goods and services at taxpayer expense to your campaign contributors, or you get them a sinecure like ambassador to the Bahamas. And then when you get out, you don't do it during your term. Then when you get out,
payback,
you leverage their positions to cash out. And that's what the Obamas are doing. Remember this new paradigm shift that was going to happen with Obama, a new day in D.C., or he's a creature of the Chicago political culture, the kleptocratic political culture here.
Well, his
and
second
he's playing
daughter
it
is,
very well.
Yeah, his second daughter is going to college soon, so they need to pay. They have expenses, too, and they have to pay for Valerie Jarrett to continue to live in their home.
Well, $50 million will help. In addition to that, Obama's also inked a joint book deal with Penguin Random House, valued in excess of $65
million. Oh, that's not enough. They need more.
The first deal, first book of that deal, is going to be Michelle Obama's memoir, Becoming. And that's due out in November.
I know it was hard for her to transition to D.C. and live in the bubble.
Transition. We'll take your calls on what Michelle Obama's memoir should be entitled.
What's it called again? Becoming?
It's not due out till November. There could be time to still change the title. Becoming. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I've got one.
What's that?
Finally proud to be an American. Or just finally proud, dot, 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 finally with an American proud. Flag.
Mm. Yeah? Yeah. All right.
What do you think?
Proud.
Okay. Well, yeah. You and your finally one proud. Word, you have to one-up me.
Well,
topper.
Yeah. Proud just has it punched. Yeah, punched.
Because it's becoming, and now we need something.
But yeah, becoming, you know, that's present participle. This is happening in real time.
Oh, wow. It's active rhetoric.
Also, yes, like this is interesting. The Higher Ground Productions, that's the company they formed to broker
they just
the.
Run out. I mean, production companies have stranger names than bands.
Oh, Higher Ground. This is our Better Angels. When they go low, Obamas go high, low. Amy. They occupy the higher ground.
I don't care if she's gorgeous, no matter what you say.
Oh, stunning. Higher Ground Productions is the name of their development company, incorporated in Delaware. Why Delaware?
Because
better corporate tax treatment?
Yeah.
Why would they do that rather than coming back to where their library is going to be here in Illinois? Ooh, that gave birth politically to President Obama and catapulted him to national and international heights. Delaware, not Illinois. Huh.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You want a case study in socialism since we have candidates running as socialists in this country. We have candidates on the Chicago City Council, Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who refer to them as socialists. We have others who are socialists who refer to themselves as progressives.
Yeah, that's the other one.
We have
Maya Pawar the other day. I was talking to him. He goes, "Well, I'm a progressive."
Yeah, you're socialist.
Like, yeah, hey, you're socialist.
and we have a lot of people self-identify as socialists increasingly. Think about what's happening on college campuses. So here's a case study in real time of socialism. And this excellent piece, it's a long reach in the journal over the weekend, The Tragedy of Venezuela. Anatoly Kermaniev, if I'm pronouncing his name right, has spent the last 5 years in Venezuela. And he compares it to the post-Soviet meltdown, saying, "Venezuela's collapse has been far worse than the chaos I experienced in the post-Soviet meltdown." Listen to what's happened in the 5 years since he's been there. And he gives vivid descriptions of the reality on the ground. But this is the macroeconomic data. 2013 was the last year that Venezuela's economy would grow. You know, that was the heady days of $100 a barrel oil and so forth. By the end of 2018, Venezuela's economy will have shrunk by an estimated 35% since 13. The steepest contraction in the country's 200-year history. The deepest recession anywhere in the world in decades. From 14 to 17, the poverty rate rose from 48% to 87%.
Oh my gosh.
9 out of 10 Venezuelans don't earn enough to meet basic needs. Children die from malnutrition and medicine shortages. An estimated 3 million Venezuelans, which is 10% of the population, have left the country in the last 2 decades of socialist rule. He talks about one coastal town that used to host the central bank party that's now largely empty, like the rest of Venezuela. It's once popular beach littered with garbage and empty even on weekends. The stalls that sold rum cocktails and fried corn pastries are closed. Extreme poverty in Venezuela has risen so steeply that it has become common to see people searching for food residues in garbage, like pictured in the capital in Caracas. The speed of collapse has transformed the lives of millions of Venezuelans almost overnight. And this is...
We did stories here where people are trying to kill rats and squirrels to eat as food. And they couldn't even find that.
Yeah, trying to jumpstart ride-sharing services as a way to earn the money that you need just to survive.
And then the socialist Maduro wins again. Which is, you know, that's a joke. That was a joke election.
Well, right. It was an election where he had no opposition. It was boycotted by the opposition
because
it was illegitimate. It was fraudulent.
Right. And if you disagreed with Maduro or you were considered a political, well, they'll throw you in prison as a political prisoner.
Yeah. He writes, does the Wall Street Journal reporter, As sluggish voting drew to a close, a smiling and confident Maduro posted a video of himself waving not to thongs of adoring supporters, but to a largely empty public square. It was a fitting metaphor for the 5 years I've spent reporting from this country, which is now ending as he begins another assignment. But I mean, it's this is great reporting. This is not
That's
fake
a
news.
Article.
This is the kind of reporting that journalists should do. And then think about what the policies we're embracing here. Think about how we, so many of us, are embracing policies that kill entrepreneurship, the golden goose. You know, this is the kind of stuff that can happen anywhere but Venezuela, anywhere but somewhere else. Wrong.
And speaking of Venezuela, we should give kudos to President Trump, because over the weekend, he and Senator Corker actually went to Venezuela and freed Josh Hault and his wife. They were wrongly imprisoned. And he was, Josh Hault had a cell phone, and he was, you know, live streaming from the prison when they had a riot and said, "They're coming to kill me. Can you please help me get out of here?" And that was accomplished this weekend.
For more on this topic and other things related to economic policy in this country, we're pleased to be joined by Jim Urio, our friend and CNBC contributor and entrepreneur in his own right. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, what about that? I mean, just trying to take examples of, you know, tragic examples, bad examples, the way that states around us use Illinois as the bad example, say, don't do what they're doing. That's the bad example. There are lessons to be learned from the bad examples, too.
But there's, I mean, history is 100% clear on where socialism ends up, and it ends up with the boat hitting the rocks, with people struggling to find rats to eat. I mean, this is not, Venezuela is not, you know, any specific sort of story. This is where it ends. That's why it's just so sad that the just blatant ignoring of any historical fact. But what's ironic today is that we're talking about Venezuela at the same time that the European experiment, and, you know, Europe is just socialism light, which is where we were headed to over the last 10 or 12 years. You know, Venezuela obviously took it a little bit further, but socialism usually goes on a linear path. And once you get a lot of people who are on the public dole, they tend to like that. Guess what? It's, you know, Finland just tried that experiment where they gave it universal basic income, I believe is what it's called. And guess what happened? Entrepreneurship, hard work, that kind of went out the window throughout the experiment. So it's amazing. But when you bring it back to Illinois, something very interesting happened last week as well. The Federal Reserve came out and said, I'm paraphrasing, we are willing to accept a little bit of inflation or letting the economy ride a little bit hot before we tighten too much. I viewed that as a specific tip of the cap to places like Illinois, which need low borrowing costs or else we're going to come off the rails. Now, what they're saying is we're going to give you some extra time to fix your problems. They don't have the view and the angle that we do here, and we don't have the confidence that Illinois is going to fix their problems. They're just going to take the freebie of low borrowing costs and probably, you know, continue the same bad habits that they have. But this everything of this is tied together: Venezuela, Europe, Illinois, and even America as well.
Well, what about, I know, just on a separate issue, mortgage rates? They seem to be going up and up. And what's going on there? Why is it happening?
Well, rates in general are going up. And when Donald Trump took office, you know, the Fed had kept rates at pretty much zero for, let's call it, 9 years.
Okay.
Now, they anticipated that Hillary Clinton was going to be president, and then they started to, you know, it's their dot plot, they call it, with the Fed, is where rates are going to be going further up. And Hillary Clinton was obviously going to be a far better macroeconomic president than Barack Obama, which is not saying much, by the way. And all of a sudden, when Donald Trump wins, they're like, okay, well, we're going to have some deregulation and have some better tax reform where companies can actually make money in this country. This is the time to let rates go higher. And they hoped that having mortgage rates go higher too would the economic activity that was going to be caused by deregulation and tax reform was going to be enough to support the housing market even with higher rates. And by the way, I believe that they're right, and they continue to be right.
What about just thinking again, kind of macroeconomic impacts? There's a lot of skittishness about the next year in particular. You've got some analysts suggesting that we're nearing a recession. Concerns about Trump's saber-rattling protectionist policies, as well as that report that came out from Goldman Sachs, I mean, of all people, but a warning about the accumulation of debt and deficits for years to come. How much stock do you put in some of the bearish projections?
Some. I think what we're doing here is a historic pivot, like I said, from more socialism light policies to socialism extra, extra light, which is what we're in now. And this is going to be a difficult thing. We had a stock market and asset prices, you mentioned mortgages. Let's just say housing prices, stock prices, all were a reflection of zero interest rates for very, very long periods of time. When we are going to a more organic sort of rate policy, all these things have to adjust. And the adjustment within those things, yeah, sure, they can cause recessions. I don't see it now. We just saw an earnings season that was pretty much blockbuster. Mm-hmm. The earnings growth was up almost 24%. Revenue growth was up almost 8%. The economic data that's coming out is good here. So we're looking overseas to Venezuela and Europe. And this morning, the market is very concentrated in Europe. That's why the stock market is down today, because Italian yields have shot through the roof. So, but if we take our vision and just look here, things are going pretty well. And with the addition of Larry Kudlow, as I worked with at CNBC for years, as the NEC director, he's a pro-growth guy, and I think they're taking the right steps to fix our problems here.
What is it that concerns you as you look ahead? Is it re-blowing up the housing bubble? Is it pension debt? Is it student loan debt? Is it something else?
No, it's definitely pensions, and it's two things. It's pensions and it's zombie companies, companies that should have declared bankruptcy sometime over the last 8 to 10 years, but they didn't because they found ever cheaper places to borrow. Think of it this way, is that, Italy, people were lending Italy money over the last few years. Now, if you know anything about Europe, the marriage between Germany and Italy is not going to work forever. Let's just say my Italian brother, they are very serious about their leisure times. They're not exactly the most productive. They're not exactly the most productive country in the world. So people were lending them money because there was no place else to lend it. When the Fed keeps rates so low for so long, they push people out the risk spectrum, and people are lending Illinois money. People bent over backwards 2 weeks ago to lend Illinois 10-year money at 4.88. That's crazy to me. Illinois has a chance of not paying you back in the long run. So yeah, pensions and companies that should have declared bankruptcies and that process being hastened by higher rates, those worry me.
And what about the trade war threat?
I don't believe it for 1 second. It never worries me a second. I think that Donald Trump and Larry Kudlow are both very much into free and fair trade, and the threats that they use, which, some people get confused by this, the protectionist threats they use are all with the end game of achieving freer and fairer trade, and I think they'll win that. I don't think for 2 seconds about trade wars.
Do you think that we do enough, this is sort of a philosophical question, or how you observe things, do we do enough, just thinking about Venezuela, to promote entrepreneurship in this country? I mean, outside of Silicon Valley and sort of the sexy companies for the snot-nosed kids, the coders and stuff, I was looking at something Mark Perry posted over the weekend in his Carpe Diem blog. 53 U.S. companies have been on the Fortune 500 since 1955. So just about 1 in 10 are still there 60 years after they appeared, 1955 to 2018, which is, of course, a testament to creative destruction. The biggest of the big can go away or certainly decline. Not everything is always going forward. Not everything is progressing. Not everything is growing. That competition produces better goods and services at lower costs and a better quality of life. And it's the productive risk-taking entrepreneur who's central to that. And is that person as elevated, as talked about in our conversations about public policy, as they should be?
As a matter of fact, the opposite is true. I think that entrepreneurship in this country is really almost, when you think of the regulation, and the tax burden, and I know we've gotten a lot better since this first round, but we have to deal here with regulations and taxes from the federal government, the state government, the county, local municipalities. Anytime that you start, and believe me, I know this firsthand within the restaurant business, it's almost comical when they come down and try to take the money from you. It's like I do think in the restaurant business or any cash business, they think their perception, the government is here, is that people cheat in cash businesses, so we better get them on the back end, which is the stupidest policy I've ever heard, in that they then, of course, provide incentive for people to actually pocket cash, which is silly. But as far as entrepreneurship goes in general, I think it's nowhere even close in this country to promoting it the way it should be.
He is Jim Urio. He's a CNBC contributor. He also almost did a shameless plug, but he pulled up short. So I want to give you the opportunity to do so. Branson Palatine.
Yes, I never normally drop the ball again. Branson Palatine, finest hamburger in the Chicago area.
There you go. Jim Urio, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So on Friday, Ireland voted 2-1 to repeal their Eighth Amendment, which was the pro-life amendment to their constitution, protecting unborn life. And
this is what it was like when the votes were totaled and the reaction from the crowd.
Votes in favor of the proposal, 1,429,981.
And they called on people.
Well, that was one side's reaction.
One side's reaction. Right. But people came in from, you know, people that had dual citizenship or were out of country, flew in just to be part of the process to take the vote.
Yeah.
Well, then, like, they're cheering. Yay, we get to kill babies now. Yay.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch.
Celebratory. Mildred Jefferson was the first black woman to graduate from Harvard Medical School in 1951. Mm-hmm. First woman of any race to intern at Boston City Hospital. She said of abortion, "I'm at once a physician, a citizen, and a woman, and I'm not willing to stand aside and allow this concept of expendable human lives to turn this great land of ours into just another exclusive reservation where only the perfect, the privileged, and the planned have the right to live." I mean, something for consideration. U2 getting rebuked by some conservative erstwhile U2 fans because they supported the repeal of the Eighth Amendment. Rod Dreyer had a piece in the American Conservative, and Mark Hemingway writing Weekly Standard to because, you know, Bono is this, you know, sort of citizen of the world. I mean, he's admittedly done good work in supporting the capitalism as a means to lifting people out of poverty. He's supported AIDS prevention in Africa and elsewhere. So Hemingway writes, "Killing a child in a mother's womb is a horrifying practice, and that the state would sanction it should in no way assuage our consciences. As much as Christian forgiveness is freely given, there are still higher laws and divine authority that must be respected. If Bono and the rest of everyone's favorite Christian rock band possess enough hubris to support the legalization of abortion in Ireland, maybe they really do think they can play God." We've got something going on in Illinois it's our version of a bit of a litmus test on culture, state of culture here. The forced taxpayer funding of abortion, elective abortion, all 9 months of pregnancy that was passed by Illinois House and Senate Democrats, signed into law by Governor Rauner. 0 of 73 House and Senate Republicans voted for it. 0 of 73. A measure so extreme, Pat Quinn and legislative Democrats wouldn't do it when they were in charge of all three branches.
And Governor Rauner promised Cardinal Supich that he would not.
Correct.
Vote for it.
He lied,
to the Cardinals.
And then he's covered his betrayals with lies on this issue, and along with the range, as all his flacks too. The Illinois Republican Party hierarchy.
Did he ever give a reason for why he did it?
He's pro-choice. Just a lie. Just whatever. It's non-responsive to the issue.
But you could be pro-choice like Quinn, but Quinn wouldn't use taxpayer-funded abortions.
I'm sure he would have, actually. I'm sure he's supportive of that. The point is that it was politically not something they wanted to do when they had complete control. You know, if it's the Madigan play. if you wait long enough, at some point you get a Republican governor to do your bidding for you. That's how it's been in Illinois, and this is why the Republican Party is on the precipice of extinction. And so now we're going to see here, as we're up against the clock, May 31st for a budget deadline for a simple majority at the state level. Then it goes to a supermajority if you go into, you know, overtime session. And some House Republicans who actually believe and are willing to fight for the things in which they say they believe HB 40 should be repealed. One way to effectively repeal it is don't fund it.
Oh.
Don't appropriate funding. So there's a push on to get a separate appropriations for a separate appropriation for House Bill 40. And the question is, do House and Senate Republicans have any fight left in them? I know some backbenchers do that are pushing this. Does the leadership? Jim Durkin professes to be pro-life. Bill Brady professes to be pro-life. Will they lead their caucuses in this direction to substantively blunt what Governor Rauner did? Because there's not 71 votes for taxpayer funding of abortion if the budget was pushed off past May 31 into overtime, when you would need 71 to pass a budget. Do they have any fight left? For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Illinois Right to Life lobbyist in Springfield. He is Ralph Rivera, a longtime lobbyist for pro-life and pro-family issues. Ralph, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan and Amy.
So how important is this push for the special standalone appropriation for HB 40 that I described?
Well, this is very important because this is the first budget year where they have to appropriate funds for House Bill 40. And as you recall, even though this is a House Bill 40 is a program to pay for elective abortions throughout the full 9 months of pregnancy, just like what was done in the Congress where the Hyde Amendment came in to say, well, but we're not paying for these, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this would have to be done every year. And so we in pro-life and with the Catholic Conference have asked legislators, House and Senate pro-life legislators, to stand with us and to oppose adding taxpayer funding for abortions in any budget bill that would have that.
Has anyone asked Bill Brady or other legislative leaders to come
forward? He's been made aware of. We did an open letter initially to all of the senators and representatives, and so the leadership is aware of what we're asking. Right.
And so they're aware of it. We seem to be running into this problem, though, with the pro-life community, where we let people who are rhetorically pro-life get away with not being substantively pro-life when it counts in the General Assembly. I mean, look at what's happened with a bunch of ostensible pro-life legislators who in the Senate who voted for the ERA, for example. What does the pro-life movement need to do to make sure we're connecting what people say to what they do or do not do?
Right. Well, in the vote that some of the you know, had been pro-life senators did on the ERA, where there's a clear abortion connection, they have been rated down on their positions by pro-life. And so we have made a stand, and we've let people know on the other side that we take this very seriously, and they will be, as you know, Dan, my group does a 1-4 rating.
Mm-hmm.
And those who voted against us have been rated down, and we will do that, you know, on the House side with the ERA if that's going to come up. So we're looking at we've sent a message to them that we're not just saying, oh, well, too bad.
Right. And on this, too, you know, this seems to me like one of these temperature taking events where who is willing to put in the fight? You know, if it's kind of one of these, well, it didn't happen, so I didn't have to vote, so then I'm absolved of responsibility. No, kind of taking a role of who is pushing this and is willing to put in the fight for this and who just wants to, you know, go home by May 31st and enjoy their summer.
Right. So, you know, there's time to do this. There are various ways to do this. As you know, there's the you have the budget implementation bill, which they call the BIMP bill, and that bill can have a Hyde Amendment language in it. That bill is used to flesh out and say, how is this money to be spent or not spent? And you can't do that in the budget itself, but you can do it in a bill, this budget implementation bill. And they could say, and none of these funds, however they want to phrase it, can be used for the elective abortions.
Do you know who?
And that doesn't take long at all to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you know who got to Governor Rauner, why he chose to support HB 40?
No, this is, you know, it's almost anecdotal. I just don't know what he was thinking. The information that I had for a couple of months is that Rauner would have mandatorily vetoed it, that he would take out the trigger language. It's called the trigger language in the preamble to the Illinois abortion law, and would have vetoed the language that made House Bill 40 what it is, the taxpayer funding bill. So that was our understanding, certainly over the summer, but then this all changed.
Has there been any, you said there was an open letter, so that's to him as well, but any effort to lobby him to provide a path back on this, particularly because this is an issue where he's at odds not just with 90% of Republicans, but he's at odds with the majority of the general electorate, too.
Right, right. I haven't. I haven't done that, but I don't have access to him.
All right. He is Ralph Rivera. Ralph, just give us, the kind of the schedule this week in terms of if people want to engage, contact their legislators and impress upon them the importance of this.
Okay. It's immediately, right now, because they're working on the various budget pieces, and they could have a vote, all of it, on Thursday or Wednesday or parts of it. So they have to call now. They can call the state operator, 217-782-2000, and when they get the state operator, say, I want to speak to Senator so-and-so or Representative so-and-so, and they'll direct them to them at the state capitol.
All right. He is Ralph Rivera, a longtime pro-life, pro-family lobbyist, Illinois Right to Life. Ralph, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you both.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. Don't ever forget what got Trump elected. It's important. We'll talk about it when Freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Rod Blagojevich has an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal.
Sweet.
It's nice that he took some time away from combing his hair and educating his fellow inmates on the...
I'm a free
on the,
rotter.
On, the,
so.
On the Bard, right? Wasn't he doing Shakespeare classes?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm
sure they were awful. Yeah, exactly. I'm in prison for practicing politics, writes Blagojevich in this Wall Street Journal op-ed. I learned the hard way what happens when an investigation comes up empty after the government has invested time, resources, and manpower. When they can't prove a crime, they create one. If that's not clear to you that this is a plea for a pardon from POTUS, he continues to make it more clear.
Well, if you were in the same position, you'd be doing everything you can to get out of there.
I don't fault
him for trying.
Except I would never be in the same position, so that's the big problem.
He learned this behavior from someone. Who in his family are Democratic operatives?
And so at what age has he become responsible for his actions?
Oh, that's right. He's off.
Fundraising is routine and necessary part of America's political system. You can't compete in politics, and you can't govern from position of strength if you are perceived as weak. He goes on to, so he's just like, I asked for campaign contributions, that's why I'm in prison. That's his version of events.
Mm-hmm.
The jury in my case was instructed to infer a quid pro quo even though no favors were offered or exchanged. Let me be clear, I never accepted gifts, vacations, clothes, jewelry, or flights on fancy jets in exchange for my political influence Whenever I went to a Chicago Cubs game, I paid for my own tickets.
True.
So today from prison, I'm warning all candidates and elected officials to watch out. The new lesser standard used against me to infer a quid pro quo can now begin used against you, too. It doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum you come from. Every office holder who raises money is potentially at risk. Those who value freedom and love our country had better wake up. Oh, my gosh. More politicians going to jail. What a prospect that would be.
He thinks federal laws need to be changed to ensure politicians are allowed to raise money without fear of being accused of seeking bribes. I mean, Jan Schakowsky has run to his side and other Democrats saying that, you know, President Trump should pardon him or commute his sentence or do something, because what he has done is what politicians have been doing throughout the history of time.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. So because some people get away with extorting campaign cash from others, then everybody should get away with it. That's the argument?
No.
Right. That's the problem. Yeah. Should he be pardoned? And look, I'm willing to cut a deal here. I will support a presidential pardon as long as Rod Blagojevich commits to run as the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in 2020.
Really?
To join the Republican ranks. This Ron or Donner party, right? I mean, what's the difference? And it has nothing to do with campaign cash. It just has to do with his principles. Doing anything other than, in terms of running for office or being an office holder, other than aggrandizing yourself or enriching your friends. I mean, that's just the point here. So why not? Why not bring Rod back? Republican, Democrat, what's the difference? How about that?
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Candace and DuPage, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, you guys. Dan, that's a pretty funny comment. I agree with you on that. He would fit in perfectly with the Senate GOP. But my point is that I think 14 years is a bit excessive when Jesse Jackson Jr. basically got a 2.5-year slap on the wrist, which I just don't understand that. Like, it seems like just from the time he was given and the fact that the prosecutor would not let all the tapes be played out, which I also think is really fishy, I don't understand that, you know, it was almost like they were trying to punish him for some reason.
Well,
14.5 years is ridiculous.
They're trying to send a message, but I think they
oversentenced
him. But they didn't send a message with Jesse Jackson Jr.
Right. Well, the message that they sent was, it's okay, and if your dad is in the know, we'll let you go.
Well, maybe they were trying to send a message because he came on the heels of another governor who was in prison. And so maybe that's the reason they were trying. There was sort of a message-sending component to this that we have to do something to impose stiffer sentences to send a message to the political class in the state that the political culture, the corrupt political culture here, the kleptocratic political culture is not something that should be tolerated.
And, Dan,
and if you get caught, then you're going to get hammered.
And Dan, I would buy that, but they didn't do the same thing with Jesse Jackson Jr.
Here's the thing, Candace. Well, they're two very different things. So the Jesse Jackson Jr. and Rod Blagojevich cases are two completely different things. One is an issue with taxpayer resources. The other is an issue with campaign cash. Jesse Jackson Jr. ran afoul of federal campaign finance law. Rod Blagojevich was leveraging the governor's office to extort campaign cash and engage in other nefarious activities. There is a difference there.
But Jesse Jackson Jr. wanted to pay up and buy the Senate seat.
Well, that's a separate issue.
And that's the thing that I wish that they waited till cash changed hands to get him.
I agree with that, but that's not what Jesse Jackson was prosecuted for. So let's just be clear on prosecution and punishment. In addition to this, do you find it somewhat counterproductive that we're so concerned about comparing and contrasting the sentences that corrupt public officials in this state get? Are you is this a preeminent concern for you that we make sure that that everybody gets the same sentence, or do you just want them out of public office? And if some get treated more harshly than others, well, that's just the vagaries of the justice system. Welcome to life being unfair.
Well, I just think the Democrats should, you know, get the same kind of sentences, and they don't seem to, you know. To
Democrats?
So.
He is a Democrat. Rod Blagojevich is a Democrat.
I mean, all the Madigan, you know, characters.
Thanks for the call, Candace. Here's the deal. Here's one other deal. Just say this because it's about Ross Zinkowski, about all, you know, what they go to prison for, the least of their crimes. The real crimes are the public policy decisions they make. The real crimes are robbing the state, destroying its economy, burdening generations of Illinoisans with unfunded pension liabilities and confiscatory property tax, so forth, destroying people's quality of life and savings and ability to provide for their retirements and so on and so forth. That's the thing that's so amazing to me.
I'm providing for firefighters and police officers' retirement my property tax.
Forget it. You're not coming close.
None
of us are collectively. But the point is to say you're so concerned about Rod Blagojevich's fate to the exclusion of your own. It's bizarre to me in Illinois.
Then what do you think when he's sending out a warning to all candidates who try to raise campaign funds while in office? Is there something there?
I mean, do you see?
He says, so today from prison, I'm warning all candidates and elected officials to watch out.
Yeah, it's a real warning. Do you see candidates, both parties, not raising ever increasing caches of cash? Do you see them not have? Do you see? Oh, well, the Rod Blagojevich, so we can't raise money anymore. No, you can't extort people. I mean, some people still do it. There's no question. And some people in office and have been in office in this state for a long time do it. There's no question, the quid pro quos that Blagojevich is talking about. Right. So some people get away with it. They're more artful than Blagojevich was. That's true. I'm sorry that's the case, but it's true. But the idea that Rod Blagojevich suggests you can't raise money and run for office anymore or raise money in office
because you'll be accused of seeking bribes?
It's nonsense. I mean, it's just nonsense. It's not true. All you have to do is look at the landscape of public officials in both parties at every level. Raising money. So, I mean, this is all very put upon because, again, this is him trying to analogize what happened to him. And look, I'm no fan of Patrick Fitzgerald, as we've talked about in the show a number of times.
Right.
But the idea, the obvious play here is for him to kind of compare his situation to what Trump is experiencing at the hands of Mueller and the Patrick Fitzgerald types. And see if he can't...
You pardon Scooter Libby.
See if he can't get Trump's ear. Well, Scooter Libby, that was a malicious prosecutor.
Right. Pat Fitzgerald was involved in that one, too.
John in Lincolnwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, good morning, Dan and Amy. I really wish this guy's name would never come up on your radio station again. I am so sick and tired of Blagojevich. I voted for this guy, and I regretted it ever since. This guy is corruption. How he can say that he didn't pay he didn't get any contribution is ridiculous. He writes an op-ed. Who cares? That's what you guys should say. Who cares? This guy, loser. I mean, you pay for your actions. Oh, his sentence wasn't as long as Jesse J. Who cares? He still did the corruption. He still did it. And now he says, everybody else should watch out. Give me a break. Like, if he didn't get out, he's not going to go back and do the same thing? Please.
Thanks for the call, please. John. Well, I mean, you know, it is worth noting that very few people, including you, are arguing his innocence. They're just arguing length of sentence.
A harsh sentence. Yeah.
Ken in Plainfield.
Morning. This is one of the few times I'm going to disagree with you, Dan. I don't care about the length of sentence or that he's in jail. I just think that it is politics as usual. The money's in politics. There's no way to take it out, and he did what any other politician would do. I got this effing opportunity that's golden. Let's exploit it. That's what politicians do.
Well,
and to prosecute him instead of others, I don't agree with it. And I never voted for the guy. I can't stand the guy. But I think because he crossed Dick Mel, he's in jail.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Ken. Well,
I've got this thing, and it's golden.
Yeah, it's just that, I mean, that's just, doesn't square with the facts, but I understand you think that everybody is doing it to varying degrees. But here's my suggestion. Rather than saying he shouldn't be prosecuted because other people do things that are similar, what about saying that other people who things do similar should also be prosecuted?
Right. And I think that's what he was warning in the op-ed.
No, he's unfairly prosecuted. He thinks he was unfairly prosecuted.
He's always going to stick up for himself and, you know, try to convince President Trump to pardon him.
Well, some people...
But he just, you know, it was a warning he had for other politicians.
Well, some people are contrite when they do something wrong, and they admit it. Rob Blagojevich isn't one of them. Dan in Libertyville.
I think Rob Blagojevich should be released on one condition. And he walks from Antioch, Illinois, all the way through Chicago, including the South Side, all the way to Cairo, wearing a pig outfit that has him tarred and feathered.
I like, thanks for the call, Dan. I like the Game of Thrones Walk of Atonement. I like that idea. Yeah. If he went from, you got to go a little bit, Zion to Cairo.
North Chicago. Oh, Zion,
If he went to from Zion to Cairo like Cersei, and did the Walk of Atonement where you could throw things at him, spit at him.
Oh,
and he'd have to do it naked.
Oh, okay, stop.
It's the Walk of Atonement.
Well, yeah, don't need to see that. He'd probably run it, knowing him.
I'll tell you what.
I want him to get out in time to perform at Naperville Rib Fest with Pitbull.
Sure, of course.
He can do his Elvis impersonation. Because he was really good in the summertime going to everybody's block parties.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's
Hey, you got the In the Ghetto song for me?
Here's what I'll do. I'll cut this deal with you since you sort of represent him, and I'm sure you speak with
him. Oh, I'm a free Blago supporter. Yeah.
I'll do a weekend furlough at Naperville Rib Fest and or shave 2 years off his sentence. I'll talk to Judge Zagel if he does the Walk of Atonement from Zion to Cairo.
Okay.
I mean, that's probably like a 15-day walk. So it's his call.
Okay.
I think shame should be a part of sentencing. It's not enough. James in Westmont.
Oh, I do love the Walk of Atonement, that's for sure. Yeah, I do. I'm so sick of people saying that, oh, he got too much time. He got too much time. It, obviously, by this, sap letter that he wrote, you know, he's too stupid to realize what he did was wrong, and of course he won't admit to it. So, yeah, he does deserve the time. And also, if I'm not mistaken, the other thing with Jesse Jackson Jr., I hate that comparison too, but I think he cut a plea deal anyway, didn't he not?
Yeah, that is also true. Thanks for the call, James. That's a good point. David and McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. I mentioned this a while back, and I still firmly believe that Blagojevich actually got out of prison about a year ago, gained about 100 pounds, and he's going under the pseudonym of J.B. Pritzker.
Yeah.
They look an awful lot alike.
But, yeah, that would happen, because I think I hear him coming.
They have that
Watch
same
out, he wants
head.
Some candy.
They have some, that, does
they
JB...
said the same amount, but when you get fatter, your neck is
He's awesome. In a fat suit.
So he is.
Is Blago in a fat suit? Do you think Spalding calls his hairbrush the football as well? Sean in Elmwood Park.
Hi, Sean.
A little more respect for the absolute next governor of Illinois, unquestionably. listen, here's the part that's disgusting about Blago, is the people's tolerance for what he did. I mean, I'm listening to this. It's mind-boggling to me. And what he did, what he's doing in this article, he's not even objecting to any of the problems of what put him away. In fact, he's defending it. And the reason you're worried why he got this long sentence, which it was a very long sentence, it isn't because his crime was so harsh. It's because his father-in-law and the rest of the scumbags that assured he was going to be governor as long as he stepped and fetched to their needs were worried he was going to beef as Obama took over. And like the coward he is, not only didn't he do it, he's defending the very system that he went away for. It is pay to play. It isn't politics as normal. It's legal bribery. And until the citizens pull their head out of their derriere, it's going to go on.
Thanks, Sean.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So Rudy Giuliani is making the rounds. Sat down with Dana Bash on CNN to talk about the investigation. Extended interview, of course, the Mueller investigation. And Giuliani essentially made his case that the basis for the Mueller investigation is illegitimate, that the Mueller investigation, sans the false basis, was legitimate until it became now also illegitimate. So both the basis and the substance of the Mueller investigation are now illegitimate, according to a member of Trump's legal team, Rudy Giuliani.
I just want to go through, because I know you use this term a lot, and obviously so does the president. This investigation has already brought charges against 22 people and entities, including 13 Russians who have been indicted for trying to change the outcome of the election. So how is it a rigged investigation when they're not even close to being done and they already have this in their pocket?
Well, because, first of all, there are two different investigations, right? The counterintelligence investigation is now over for over a year, and they weren't disclosing it to anybody. Immediately, that raises questions in my mind. Why not? I think why not? Because it clears the president. Then you get the Comey thing, which is a leak of a confidential memo, which is illegal for an FBI official to do, and that becomes the basis for appointing Mueller. I'm not saying Mueller is illegitimate. I'm saying the basis on which he was appointed is illegitimate. Now let's look at the indictments.
I just want to stop. So you think that the Mueller probe is legitimate?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. And the interesting thing Dana Bash has set up there about 22 indictments. Yeah, okay. You have, in terms of principles here, you know, 13 Russians that are never going to appear in an American courtroom is not groundbreaking here. In terms of Russian collusion, which is the genesis of the investigation, the basis of it, you have Papadopoulos and Flynn for lying to the FBI, and you have Manafort and Gates for things that are unrelated to the Russian collusion investigation, and Dana Bash and the D.C. press corps trying to pass this off as somehow productive. I'm not buying it. In addition to that, you had Mark Meadows, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Republican from North Carolina. He was on with Face the Nation, and he had some specific questions he believed should be answered about that confidential informant the FBI had embedded in the Trump campaign, Stephen Halper.
You have to ask the question, when did it start? We do know that actually those confidential human sources were engaging prior to the official FBI investigation. So the question begs, at whose direction, you know, what were they collecting and who were they reporting to? Because that was happening before the FBI actually opened an investigation.
Yeah. When did it happen? What were they collecting? Who was he reporting to? This all seem like legitimate questions. For some answers to legitimate questions and assertions by Rudy Giuliani and the Trump White House, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Andy McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor in Manhattan, of course, a columnist, contributing editor for National Review, nationalreview.com. He, along with Byron York and Kim Strassel at Wall Street Journal, are like the three must-reads on this whole topic of Russian collusion, these concurrent investigations. Andy, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Morning. Great to be with you.
So what about Rudy's assertion that the basis for the investigation was illegitimate and Mueller no longer has legitimacy in terms of the substance of what the investigation is, of how the investigation is proceeding?
Well, I think two things struck me, Dan, listening to what you and Amy played a second ago. One is that Rudy's obviously the president's lawyer, and he's clearly going to make the best pitch from his point of view. He's an advocate. He's not, you know, somebody who doesn't have a dog in this fight, so to speak. And the second thing is there's a real imprecision in the language as the media interviews the Trump people. And I find this again and again. So, for example, Rudy says that the origins of the investigation are illegitimate. And Dana Bash comes back and says, how could you say this was rigged? They've got, you know, 22 dispositions or 22 convictions or 22 charges, whatever she says. And I'm sitting there baffled because I don't know how she went from the legitimacy of the opening of the investigation to whether it's rigged, which is a completely different
question.
Yeah, and she's also sort of arguing. She's also kind of essentially asserting ends justify the means. It's producing some results, so who cares if it was illegitimate?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I mean, you know, you can attack. Let's say, for example, I have a grand jury that's not properly convened under the law, and they crank out, you know, 10 sets of charges against people who are actually guilty of what they've been charged with. It could be perfectly true that the charges that were brought against the people were on the up and up in the sense that they really did commit the crimes, and the investigation could be illegitimate because the grand jury wasn't properly convened, right? So in the instance we're dealing with Mueller, the problem with his investigation from the start has been that he's appointed as a special counsel under regulations that the Justice Department is supposed to follow, and the regulations say that you can only appoint a special counsel for a criminal investigation under circumstances where you spell out the factual grounds for having a criminal investigation, and the Justice Department didn't do that. Now, that doesn't mean that if Mueller conducts an investigation like he has in the nature of something that doesn't have any limits or boundaries, if he finds misconduct, that that's not really misconduct, but it does call into question the legitimacy of his investigation in the sense that he was not appointed properly under the law. He's a very good prosecutor. He's a very good investigator. It doesn't mean that the stuff that he's found hasn't been crimes, but it does call into question his capacity, his jurisdiction to bring these charges. And I guess the second thing is, if you look at what he was appointed to conduct, it was a counterintelligence investigation, as Rudy points out, which is very different from a criminal investigation. His main mandate has been to find out, to get to the bottom of Russia's threat to our election system. And in that connection, whether he had the jurisdiction or not, you know, he brought these charges against 16 Russians, right? 13 individuals and three entities. Well, okay, that certainly seems within the bounds of what he was asked to investigate. Even, you know, we can quibble about whether it's criminal or counterintelligence. If you're doing a legitimate counterintelligence investigation and you find evidence of crimes, you're allowed to charge those. But all the other stuff that she's padding the stats with,
yeah,
as you pointed out, has nothing or very little to do with what the rationale for this investigation was in the first place. So, you know, I mean, the fact that Manafort may have committed a bunch of money laundering, and we don't know yet, he hasn't been convicted, he's only accused, but let's say he committed everything that Mueller says he committed. You know, he's got like 30 or 40 felony charges involving escapades with the Ukrainians between 2004 and basically 2014. That doesn't have anything to do with what Mueller was brought in to investigate. So the fact that he might be able to convict Manafort on that doesn't at all support the legitimacy of either the origins of the investigation or the way it's been conducted.
Or the necessity of a special prosecutor for those sorts of prosecutions. What about what Mark Meadows said, too, these questions he has about the confidential informant, Stefan Halper, maybe there are others, Michael Caputo suggesting that others from other agencies made a run at him. But it's been fascinating to watch the D.C. press corps has essentially taken the position that Trump's assertion that this could possibly be bad, that it could be bigger than Watergate, that you have essentially the machinery of the state being used by those in power to spy on a political campaign. This could have been happening, which should be chilling. They basically take a position.
No, they're poo-pooing it.
Well, you have no proof that that's what happened, so we don't want to know the answer to that question.
Well, they're calling the spy a source.
So why don't we get the okay? Fine, then prove up by giving us the answer to the question.
Yeah, it used to be that journalists were like in the investigation business, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, now they're in denial.
What it meant was that. I'm sorry?
I said now they're in denial because it doesn't fit their narrative. So they're not saying that it's a spy. They're saying, no, this person is a source. But was this person, was he, yes or no, paid by the FBI $400,000?
Yeah.
Or is that fake news?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've said this before. I mean, I'm astonished by their
punctiliousness of the bit about the nomenclature. You know, when I was a prosecutor, when the informants worked for the government, for the prosecution, when I got up to talk to the jury, they were confidential informants. And when the defense lawyers got up to talk to the jury in the same case about the same people, they were spies.
Right, of course.
But, you know, everybody knew that it was the same thing, right? They're covert operatives who were going to get information. And the issue isn't the nomenclature. You know, the issue isn't what euphemism or hyperbole you use to describe them. The issue is, was there a legitimate reason to use informants under circumstances where we have a norm in this country that says the incumbent administration does not use the awesome counterintelligence powers in federal law against the opposition political party in a political campaign in the absence of very strong evidence of egregious misconduct? And it doesn't look like they have that. And the oddball thing listening to all this is, you know, I said a moment ago, we have to remember Rudy's an advocate. He's the president's lawyer. At least Rudy isn't pretending to be anything other than the president's lawyer. When I listen to the media people question him, they're advocates too. And that's fine, but they ought to just say so instead of pretending to be objective, because they're clearly not.
No question. And so when Rudy and Dana Bash also kicked around this idea again of Trump sitting down with Mueller, and Rudy reiterated that Trump really wants to sit down with Mueller. He's basically hell-bent on it, and his position and the legal team's position is much less enthusiastic, seemed to be increasingly less enthusiastic as compared to what Rudy was saying just a couple of weeks ago. Maybe it's in part because it seems like the public is turning against this investigation as legitimate. So if you don't have public support, and thus you wouldn't have popular support backing congressmen to move on impeachment, then why take the risk? What's your opinion where the investigation stands right now about that potential sit down?
Well, my opinion about that hasn't changed, which is that the big hole in this equation is a showing by Mueller that his interview of the president is necessary for some imperative purpose. So if you in the Justice Department wanted to interview, say, a journalist or a defense lawyer, you wouldn't just be able to do that because you thought it would be interesting and relevant. You would have to show that you had such an important reason. You were investigating something really serious in the nature of crime, and the source that you were seeking, who has special constitutional duties or protections, is an absolutely essential witness in the sense that you can't get the information from anyplace else. So what I would want, what I don't understand hasn't happened to this point, is no one in the Justice Department has no supervisor. Everybody in the Justice Department has a boss, including the Attorney General, who answers to the president. The special counsel has a boss, even though he's being allowed to operate as if he didn't have one. And the adult leadership here, which is supposed to be the Deputy Attorney General in this instance, should not allow Mueller to even ask to interview the president in the absence of showing, here is the very serious crime that I need to take up the time of the president of the United States for, and here is why I must interview him, because no one else has the evidence and the testimony that I need in order to make this case. If he can't satisfy that, then we shouldn't even be having a discussion about whether a federal prosecutor gets to talk to the president. I hate to break this to people, but the president's job is more important than Mueller's, and it's more important than Mueller's investigation. And in a normal case, you don't get to talk to any public official that you think might be interesting to speak to. You have to show that it's essential to do it.
He is Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, nationalreview.com. Andy, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate your insights.
My pleasure.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
On Friday, we talked about Morgan Freeman, and some people had come forward and said that he was inappropriate. Not that he sexually harassed them, but he would make lewd comments. Well, another alleged victim has come forward. This woman worked at ET back in 2010. Is this harassment?
You got a dress that's halfway between your knee and your hip. And you sit down right across from me and you cross your legs.
It's uncomfortable.
It is. He said, I am devastated that 80 years of my life is at risk of being undermined in the blink of an eye. All victims of assault and harassment deserve to be heard and we need to listen to them. But it's not right to equate horrific incidents of sexual assault with misplaced compliments or humor. That's what that was.
Well, there's something to that. I mean, there's some creepy comments he made. But, I mean, if this is not an employer, employee, superior, subordinate situation. This is mostly with reporters, right?
Right.
So, I mean, there is something to that. I mean, we have to make distinctions based on the actual conduct before we just throw everybody into the Me Too boiler.
Right, and put him on the do not hire shelf. Like Kevin Spacey.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I think Ann B. Davis's bowling ball has the definitive tweet.
All right, let me hear it.
On Starbucks Anti-Bias Training Day, which is today.
Yeah, it starts at 2 o'clock. 8,000 Starbucks stores will be closed. So get your goodies early, folks.
City announces pop-up shelters to handle deluge of screenplay writing D-bags in search of free Wi-Fi. Yeah, that about sums up the net impact on you of the Starbucks Anti-Bias Training Day.
You don't frequent Starbucks. I do. And it's changed our neighborhood. We just got one put in at Ashland and Irving after about 19 different mattress stores that went belly up.
Mm-hmm.
And it has changed our neighborhood because now more condos are being built, more businesses are coming in because it's a busy place that people walk to or drive through.
I think you may have that in reverse in terms of condo building being precipitated by Starbucks.
It's true.
I think the density is what's driving the Starbucks location, but okay. And so
I spoke with one of the, millennials,
please use the terms.
Who works the morning shift, said that it's at 2 o'clock today, said that she can come in to get extra pay. They are paying all the employees who are staying for this. And apparently, John Legend has got some video he made. Yeah. What? Mike, you can jump in. Was it Usher or John Legend? One of those.
I think it's Common.
Oh, Common. I'm sorry. Yeah. Common made a video to talk about race relations, and then there's some songs, and it's a music video that's going to be played at all of these, Starbucks for the employees, and they're going to talk about white guilt. They're going to talk about any problems that they've encountered, in regards to gender or nationality, and... Why are you still laughing?
Yeah.
It's just going to be a big, kumbaya moment, and that's what's going to happen. So every employee is going to hear this video first.
Common's a Chicago guy. Wonder if he wants to talk at all about, violence. Memorial Day violence. I think it's been updated. 8 dead and 39 wounded. Over the weekend, which is consistent with the last 3 years. That's the new normal under Tiny Dancer.
And it wasn't all gunshots, for wounded when it came to violence, because there was an altercation at the Adler Planetarium.
Hot coal fight.
Hot coal fight. That's the name of your junior high band.
Knives, bats, and hot coals.
So it wasn't all guns, but it was it was scary. Like, there was something in the air. You could just tell. If you went to North Avenue Beach on Friday. That's when they started doing something new. This is our new reality. They're going to... You have to line up, and police have to search your bag with a billy club. They look through there to make sure there's no weapons, no alcohol, nothing of that sort.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. If you'd like to weigh in on the Starbucks re-education centers or
the hot coal fight at the...
Yeah, sure, exactly. Elder Lansing, this... clergyman from South Carolina, I thought had a pretty good tweet about Chicago.
Okay. He's praying for us?
This is over the weekend. This, the counts increased, but 30 shot and 7 killed so far over the Memorial Day weekend in Chicago. And that's with an additional 1,000 officers deployed. And I guarantee the shooters weren't Confederate statues or NRA members. But Black Lives Matter, right? I mean, what are we talking about in Chicago? The 8 dead and the 39 wounded. We're talking about almost exclusively, young Black and Latino men. Mm-hmm. So, anybody got anything to say about them? Anybody give a rat's ass? I mean, I'm just asking. I don't know. I know we're very busy worrying about your bathroom privileges at Starbucks. Meanwhile, you have these body counts in Chicago. And it's all these organizations that are so identity obsessed, and there's little attention paid, suggestions made with respect to people being slaughtered on the streets in the city. And it's not limited to the South and West sides. Increasingly, it's not. And this is why Chicago's getting increasingly dangerous, right? But what about that? I thought Elder Lansing makes a good point. It's not Confederate statues to virtue signal about, not a three-letter acronym to demagogue. They're just dead men of color and maimed men of color and one party in control, the party to which all of these identity groups affiliate. Well, it's just interesting to note, I guess. I mean, I know people of the center left don't want to do anything about it. You just want a virtue signal about it. I know the Republican Party, like, just to be specific to Illinois and Chicago, we want to just pretend that Chicago doesn't exist so we don't have to deal with it because the Democrats are in control. So we don't want that responsibility any more than we want the responsibility to do anything in Illinois at the state level. Okay. Byron in Lombard, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, I love this topic. The only thing I want to say is, how about the perfect storm? Obama, a Democrat, was president. We had Democratic senators. We had a Democratic governor, Pat Quinn, and a Democratic mayor. Perfect storm to do exactly what was needed. Obama could have compelled Walmart, any of these large companies, hey, you will build on the South Side. You will. There's all kinds of things. They had all the power in the world, and they ignored it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Byron. I'm not sure about being compelled to locate a business somewhere. But, I mean, look at what Tiny Dancer's done. Well, let's put a Whole Foods in Inglewood.
Oh, that's going to change everything.
Yeah.
Whole paychecks. I can't even afford to go to Whole Foods.
Well, it's underwritten by the city down there with the incentives
to
locate. Yeah, maybe I'll put in
a gallon of milk is $2 there, which is not bad.
Maybe we just need a Neiman Marcus in the Austin neighborhood and that.
A Saks Fifth Avenue.
Put her right up.
In Kenilworth. Why not?
Oh, boy. Mike on the South Side.
Hey, how's it going this morning?
Good.
Not only is there one-party control in the city with politics, but they control the media in this city, and the narratives are never put out in the way they're supposed to be reported, ever.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Right. I mean, well, sure, the big government press corps. And also, too, I mean, this is why, you know, the digital age, it's so interesting. The people that tweet what they hear on the police scanner, it's remarkable. Like the CWB Chicago, that's where I saw the news about the hot coal fight. I mean, some of this is remarkable. Saturday, let's see here. Someone has set the median on fire, Lakeshore Drive in LaSalle. This is like Clockwork Orange, just bands of roving Malcolm
McDowells.
Yeah, those are
kids that were kicked out of North Avenue Beach because at some point in time they stopped letting people in.
Saturday, 8:22 p.m. Mayhem, says the downtown police dispatcher, taking a few brief seconds to summarize what she and Chicago cops are dealing with. Mayhem. Lakeview, officers call for backup. 15 to 20 people are beating up a boy who tried to prevent them from stealing a bike at the Lane Tech High School Memorial Day Carnival. 70 to 80 teens coming off.
Did you say Lane Tech?
Yes. 70 to 80 teens coming off the Chicago Red Line tell water tower to close.
Wow.
Marty in Naperville.
Hey, guys. Great show. I hope you guys had a good weekend. Listen, I was on a flight from Chicago to Florida, and I was next to a couple from Canada and got to talking to Vives for a couple hours. These people are scared to death to come to Chicago, and they're not the only ones. They said that they won't even they won't even get off the plane at O'Hare. And we make light of this, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but we're so used to this stuff. And I'm telling you, it is just killing. It's got to be really putting a dent in the travel into the city. These people were genuinely scared. They were convinced that everybody in Chicago has either been shot or been shot at. And if you haven't yet, you're going to be. Mm-hmm. And they can't walk downtown to hear about beautiful Michigan Avenue. And then, it's unbelievable. But we're just, we make light of it. And like I said, I don't mean making fun of it. But, we're so immune to it. It's not a good thing.
No, it isn't. Thanks for the call, Marty. Well, here's the thing. Chicago's a great city, great convention city. So I think tourism has actually bumped up last year to, kind of another historic high. But what you don't have an appreciation for, what it's difficult to necessarily calculate, is the opportunity costs that we pay, right? The opportunity costs for the people who aren't coming or who don't come back. As you say, the people who are scared because they believe the way that we've been branded. And unfortunately, there's some truth to the branding, right? When you have more murders than L.A. and New York combined, that's a reality on the ground that's undeniable. In addition to just being a terribly run city politically, even though it's a beautiful city. And it's the same opportunity cost that's hard to measure of the businesses that don't come. The businesses here that don't expand, looking to get out. What we are able to start quantifying is the exodus, right? That the politicians who sold us out and are now driving people out. That's easier to quantify. The opportunity cost, though, I suspect, is massive because it is such a great city. It is such a beautiful city, particularly in the summer. So it's an attractive place to be, except for the mayhem that has been unleashed by the civilian political authorities. That makes it a lot less attractive. Amy on the Northwest Side.
Dan, you mentioned the Black Lives Matter movement in your commentary, and I just wanted to bring up the point that not one of these individuals that was murdered this weekend was murdered by the hands of a police officer.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for the call. Yeah. Right. No, we're not talking about police-involved shootings. We're not talking about young men killed at the hands of police. So that's why you get quiet from the left. What are they to say to the mayhem that has ensued under the policies that they support and the politicians who propose those and advance those policies? What are they to say? It's not as bad as you think. We're working on it, and there's plenty of blame to go around. There's their three-pronged answer. There's your Chicago Democrat three-pronged answer for everything that ails the city and the state. Megan on the South Side.
Hi, good morning, guys. I was just wondering, irregardless of the people who were killed, you said 37 people were wounded. I assume that's gunshot wounds. And that is a very expensive thing to have treated. Who pays for that?
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Megan. Yeah, right.
Money pit.
Right. Not just who pays for the emergency care, but who pays for the long-term care. You get shot. That in most instances is a debilitating injury, right? That takes a long time to recover from.
Not if you're Jason Seaman.
Well,
the hero. Well, he was shot three times, but he's a tough guy and a hero.
Well, and he
stopped a school shooter.
And he was fortunate. And so is that 13-year-old girl in Noblesville, Indiana, who was shot and she's in critical and stable condition. It was fortunate. But the school shootings, there's something to that. But what we're talking about is a school shooting. In terms of carnage, a school shooting virtually every day, certainly every weekend in the summer in Chicago.
Right.
And what's the response from the civilian political authorities who are quick to jump on when it's about gun control at with the kids in Parkland, Florida, or Arne Duncan proposing that kids nationwide ban or boycott schools until more gun control laws are passed on top of the existing gun control laws. I'm waiting for Arne Duncan to call for CPS families to boycott Chicago schools until we have sensible hot coal control here.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one.
Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.